Remarkably, of all the hundreds of books published about John F. Kennedy, there has never been a comprehensive collection of his letters. Now, for the 50th anniversary of Kennedy's death, historian and author Martin Sandler has gathered the letters of John F. Kennedy. With his youthful good looks and quick wit, Kennedy mastered television, became the most photographed person in the world, and emerged as a visual icon. Yet according to Sandler, for all of his telegenic charm, at his core, he was a reader and writer, indeed one of the most literate men ever to occupy the White House. It's a great pleasure to welcome Martin Sandler to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
Martin Sandler has taught American history at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst and at Smith College, and has written many works on American history, and it's a great pleasure to have you with us. What got you thinking about collecting the letters of President Kennedy?
Well, you know, I did a book for young adults. I do about half my books for adults and half my books for young adults, and I did a young adult book called Kennedy Through the Lens, and in doing the research for that, I discovered exactly what you so articulately said at the beginning, and that is that it just amazed me that as I started going through the archives at the John F. Kennedy Presidential Library, there are these 2.5 million letters, and no one has ever done a book on them. And it's my thesis, Joe, and I'm really convinced of this, that you can tell more about Kennedy the president, Kennedy the man, and those incredible times in which he lived from the letters that he wrote and the letters he received than all the books that have been written about him. They're very, very human documents. I've been saying as I've started to do speeches on this, thank God there was an email or we would not have had a book.
You talk about his writing style, that it could be shrewd. It was often very funny and often eloquent as well.
Yes, it was absolutely. What's most important, I mean, he's Kennedy, so he's going to be witty, he's going to be funny, and he's going to be shrewd, everything that you just said. But the thing that impresses me most when you look at the letters is that I don't think there's any other place where he so clearly reveals what his view is and what his feelings are on a particular subject. I mean, the letters that come into him, many of them so angry, so vituperative, when he's running for president and these people are writing saying, we would never vote for a Catholic. And they're explaining why a Catholic could never be president. How can you be running for office when your allegiance is going to be to the Pope and the Vatican rather than to the Constitution? And we can see in those letters, in this book, the letters that I selected, although there are several hundred more back in the archives, in which every person who wrote to him with this, he replies saying, this is why my being a Catholic does not in any way disqualify me. My allegiance is to the country. And then he spells it out even better than in his Houston speech, which seemed to have put that issue to rest for a while. The same thing is true on the space issue. He explains exactly why it's important for America to be first in space. And you see it through the letters because he's got the time. He's got the time to set it forth. He's got, and of course, he's certainly got the ability to write it that way. And again, as I say, thank God there wasn't Twitter, and thank God there wasn't email, so we'd have had sound bites, Joe, instead of his really articulating it, you know.
And I think you can add civil rights to those issues as well.
Oh my goodness, yeah. I mean, and you know, the whole civil rights thing. Good for you. The civil rights letters, in many ways, are incredible because these civil rights leaders are angry. They are sick and tired of waiting. I mean, there's letters from A. Philip Randolph and James Farmer and Lewis and these people who are saying, yeah, it's okay for you to say, wait, your turn will come. We've got kids being bombed. We've got kids dying. How long are we going to wait? How long would you wait, Mr. President? And it's not until the whole George Wallace standing in the door blocking blacks from enrolling in the university that he finally says, I can't have them wait anymore. And you can see in this exchange of letters the whole progression. That's the other thing, Joe. The letters starting with the first letter in the book, which was John F. Kennedy's first letter he ever wrote, in which he's asking his father for a 20-cent raise in his allowance because he's now a Boy Scout. And up to now, he's been able to get by on what he's had on the 40 cents because he can buy hot fudge sundaes and that kind of stuff. But now that he's a Boy Scout and he's come to be a much more responsible person and he now needs things like knapsacks and canteens, he's got to have a raise. You see his development from that through the man who will go head-to-head with Khrushchev in letters more than almost and more than anywhere else in the Cuban Missile Crisis. You see how the letters absolutely give us real hints on what he's going to do about Vietnam.
And one of the significant things I think about the book is that you present both sides. You get both sides of the correspondence and get an idea of what he's responding to, and they just aren't single letters.
Yeah, and the book, you know, that's right. The letters collectively are not a love letter, a collective love letter to Kennedy. I mean, the thing that's amazing is that this guy, he's the youngest president ever elected. He is living in the most extraordinary times, I believe, than any president in the United States, maybe with the exception of Lincoln, of course, with the Civil War. But that's one, albeit overpowering issue, but that's one issue. Kennedy, the thing that I came away with reading so many of these letters, the thing that I came away from is this man gets up every morning. Berlin is blowing up. Cuba is blowing up. The rest of Europe is blowing up. The entire south of the United States is exploding in civil unrest. And now he's getting all of these hints that there's a place in called Vietnam that even he's having trouble figuring out where it is. And that may be the most explosive issue of all. So he's having to deal with all of these things simultaneously, day by day. There's not a day goes by when he doesn't have to deal with them.
I want to talk about some of the issues and some of the things that I just tagged in the book because I thought they were quite extraordinary. One is the letters with John Kenneth Galbraith. So here's a guy who I had the great fortune of meeting shortly before his death and spending a lot of time with him and interviewing him. And he's fascinating because he basically writes a series of letters about everything that was wrong with the speech that Kennedy gave accepting the presidential nomination. And then he ends up being one of the president's most trusted advisors.
That's very perceptive, Joseph. That's right. That's absolutely right. I mean, I loved going through the Galbraith letters. I wish I could have put all of them in there. You know, Galbraith is so damn smart. And Kennedy, you know, Kennedy admired two things more than anything else. He admired courage and he admired smart. And the letters that go back and forth between Kennedy and Galbraith, particularly even before he appoints him, you know, ambassador to India, are just so wonderful to read because they're so clever, they're so witty. But Galbraith is one of the few guys who's not afraid to tell Kennedy exactly what he feels. And so, yeah, after the speech, he says, "Look, it wasn't bad." You know, everybody else in the world saying it's the greatest speech ever. It wasn't bad, but here's where you went wrong. Here's what you got to do better next time. The letter I also love, I mean, I love them all from Galbraith, but the letter I love from Galbraith also is that when Kennedy, during the missile crisis, and, you know, we were very, very close to exploding, and people are building bomb shells, and John F. Kennedy, the President of the United States, writes an article for Life magazine supporting the magazine, telling how to build a bomb shelter, and Kennedy sends to Galbraith the government's plan for how to protect citizens in case of a nuclear attack. And Galbraith writes back, and what he's saying is, yeah, that's great. It's a great plan for rich people who can afford this, this, and this. All the rest of the nation is going to die because you haven't provided anything for them. And Kennedy takes it and understands it, and he kills the publication of that. And all through, you see, you know, Kennedy relied a lot on advisors, and it's a lot of these letters that are most telling coming to him are from people like Arthur Schlesinger Jr. and like Ann Galbraith, because it's through these letters that you see Kennedy agonizing over the issues. I mean, in Vietnam, I mean, the letters and what the letters from during the Vietnam period indicate is that he's like about half of his advisors are telling him, bomb the hell out of these people and put an end to this. And the other half saying, are you crazy? We do that, we're going to be in there forever. And so you're right. You're right on about the Galbraith letters. I also love the letter that he writes to Galbraith's son on his 11th birthday, saying, "You met Galbraith and you were with Galbraith. You know that he could have played center for the Los Angeles Lakers.
Tall man."
Kennedy writes a letter to Jamie Galbraith on his 11th birthday, saying, "Happy birthday! I hope you're of a more convenient size than your father."
Martin Sandler is our guest this morning. We're talking about the letters of John F. Kennedy. The book is published by Bloomsbury Press. I think one of the things that also I took away from the book, and I was so glad that you included them, are the letters from children, the letters from citizens, and you really get the sense of what this president, while he was in office, during his very short time as president, of the impact that he had on people and their lives.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, nobody inspired a nation more than John F. Kennedy. He just had that innate ability to do it. And it wasn't just in the incredible inaugural address, but throughout his presidency. And, of course, you know, I give a lot of speeches, Joe, and, you know, I learned a long time ago, try never to avoid a dog act or a kid's act on the stage, you know, because it ain't going to work. And you read the letters from kids, and at first you say, oh, my God, these are the most charming. And, of course, they are. So, you know, you've got Kennedy's reply to Michelle Rashawn, in which he has written saying, I know this Cold War is going on, and I know the Russians are doing this and that, but are they going to blow? Are they going to shoot down Santa Claus? You know, and he writes the wonderful letter saying, Michelle, don't worry. I talked to Santa Claus this morning, and he's assured me that he's going to make a special trip to your house. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But then you get these letters from a 9-year-old kid saying, right after John Glenn comes home in triumph, saying, Mr. President, I know how excited everybody is, and I know Mr. Glenn is a wonderful hero, and I love him, but can you explain to me why we're spending so many billions of dollars on this space program when so many people at home are hungry and so many people at home can't pay their rent? Don't you think we should really be putting the money into more important things? I mean, that's like from a 9 or 10-year-old kid. And there's about 10 or 11 of those kind of letters. So that, yeah, you could do a whole book on just the letters from the kids. And I'm glad you picked up on what you said, and that is that the letters are from the most important people in the world, of course, from Khrushchev to Macmillan to Albert Schweitzer to the whole gamut. And then they're from the kids, and then they're, as you say, from the ordinary people expressing their opinion on every subject imaginable. And many, 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 many of them, despite all that was going on, Kennedy took the time to respond to.
I said this in the introduction of your point of Kennedy being one of the most literate men ever to occupy the White House. And the correspondence between JFK and the poet Robert Frost, who, of course, read at his inauguration, it's a beautiful exchange.
Yes, it is. And there's a couple of surprises in there, too, that I didn't know. You know, as I researched this, you would expect that there'd be a letter from Kennedy to Frost thanking him for accepting and thanking him for delivering the speech and the whole thing. And it's there, and there's that lovely exchange. But there is the most magnificent 4 or 5-page letter from Frost to Kennedy, because I did not know that Kennedy had actually asked Frost to be an unofficial emissary to Russia during this Cold War. And he sent Frost. He asked Frost to go to Russia in an exchange of poets and to meet with Russian officials and to try to ease tensions as much as he could. And Frost, as only Frost could, writes the most brilliant letter saying, well, I'm going to do it, but here's my reservations on what I can accomplish and here's what I intend to accomplish. And it's a very, very important letter. And again, I don't know if it's ever been published in a book before. And Kennedy and Frost really did develop this extraordinary relationship.
I got a sense, and I'm interested in your perception of this, of that there are times in these letters where, yes, I mean, there's a question and then there's a response of how the president feels. But in some cases, and sometimes in many cases on really complex issues, that he's using the letter as a way to work it out himself.
You've got to write your own book, Joe. That's That is really true. That is really right on. Yeah. I mean, what it does, I hope I did, I don't even remember, in one of the introductions, I talk about the fact that the letters give him an opportunity. And that's exactly what you're saying. Good for you. I mean, what he's saying is that he gets this letter and he says, wait a minute, here's my opportunity to really state down in black and white how I feel on this Catholic issue. Here's my opportunity to really state. I mean, I'll tell you the absolutely most important letter of that kind in the book. He gets a letter from a woman named Bobby Lou Pendergrass. And what she says to him is, dear Mr. President, I am a big supporter of yours. I think you're a wonderful president. I will have to tell you that one of my older brothers died in World War II. My second oldest brother died in Korea. We are so proud of them. We knew what they were fighting for. We knew where they were fighting. We've now just gotten a telegram saying that my youngest brother has been killed in a place called Vietnam. Where the heck is Vietnam? I don't know. And why are we there, Mr. President? Can you please tell me why my brother has to die in a place that no one's ever heard of and for a cause that none of us can figure out? And so it's a very touching letter. Of course, it may be the first Vietnam protest letter. But it's just what you were talking about, Joe, the answer that Kennedy gives. He seizes it as an opportunity to figure out, why the hell are we there? Why am I sending these advisors? And you read that letter, and, you know, tragically he dies not long after that letter arrives, and then he responds. I think it's the most articulate, direct response as to why he sent advisors of anything he ever wrote or that's in any of the books.
You finish the book by talking about in the weeks following the assassination that there are just thousands of letters of condolences that come in, of course, many of them just from average citizens and, of course, from heads of state and from people all over the world, and how that was addressed by the White House and how those letters were answered.
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of them come into the White House, a lot of them come into the State Department, everyone. I end the book with a letter that Jacqueline Kennedy responds to Nikita Khrushchev, thanking him so much for his condolences and telling, you know, that the whole, what comes through in these letters so clearly is this extraordinary relationship between Kennedy and Khrushchev. Let me just say this, that there are so many theories as to how Kennedy was able to save the world from blowing itself up during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And people point to his brilliant idea of coming up with a quarantine idea, or his courage in resisting all of his military things. I will tell you, I absolutely know, and I think these letters in this book prove, what saved the world were these letters that Kennedy and Khrushchev exchanged. They decided between them, and it was actually Khrushchev's idea first, if we are so angry with each other, they're saying, we so disagree with each other that we are calling each other names, but Mr. President, Mr. Prime Minister, Mr. Chairman, if we don't keep in touch with each other every single day and tell each other what each is thinking and what each is planning to do, we are going to lose control of this, and the world is going to blow up. And they make this secret arrangement that they are going to write to each other every day, and they are going to make sure they send the letters in secret diplomatic pouches so the press doesn't get hold of it and blow it out of proportion. And that's how they're going to try to solve it, and that's how it gets solved. And for me, if there's one great validation of my thesis that the letters are more important than anything else that has been written, it's that. I mean, you want to come up with one reason why they were able to solve it. I mean, the other thing that's incredible is that there are so many surprises you find. I mean, I'm old enough to remember, to have a vision of Khrushchev as the guy who sat at the table at the UN and took off his shoe and banged it on the table.
Right.
But I tell you, you read these letters, he's not that kind of a bore. And then in this whole exchange, for example, of Kennedy and Khrushchev letters during the Cuban Missile Crisis, the great statement, The most memorable statement of all that comes out is one of them writes to the other and says, Mr. President, if we don't solve this and if we don't solve this right now, the living will envy the dead. That's not Kennedy. That's Khrushchev. So there are a lot of surprises as you go through this.
As far as the source of the letters, primarily drawn from the JFK Presidential Library and Museum.
Yeah, primarily drawn. I mean, you know, there's almost 3 million letters there, and primarily drawn, but from a lot of other sources too. I mean, I knew I wanted to get those incredible letters that I had known were written by Linus Pauling. One of Kennedy's greatest goals in his life was to get a nuclear test ban treaty. I mean, I think may have been his greatest triumph. And I knew that Pauling was the one who was writing him these letters saying, Mr. President, are you going to be sitting there while the world blows up? You know? And those are like at the University of Oregon and throughout so many different sources. There were specific kinds of letters I wanted to get that are not in the Kennedy Library, but I would say 90% of them are there. The people at the – it's a long – I think maybe one of the reasons that there hasn't been a book of this kind, which still astounds me and delights me, is that it's a long, hard chore. And, you know, I'm a nut. I mean, I'll sit there 12, 13 – I did not read all 3 million letters, but I sure and read a couple hundred thousand of them. And I sure had people helping me to point to which collections would probably reveal to me what I wanted to find. It was a long, hard test, but it's so worthwhile because these are important and they need to be seen. And along with all they reveal about what was going on, they're very human documents. I mean, you and I both know. I don't know when the last time, Joe, you wrote a letter. I haven't written a letter in 5 or 6 years.
Right.
And it's a lost art, and it was an art. And you, as you said, not me, you said it made you think about what you wanted to say.
Right.
And so you see that. You see it both from Kennedy and from the people who wrote to him.
Well, you so humanize this president, and the book is really insightful. And it's The Letters of John F. Kennedy. It's published by Bloomsbury Press. Martin Sandler is the editor. Martin, thank you so much for sharing with us this morning. I so appreciate your time.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is The Letters of John F. Kennedy, edited by Martin Sandler, published by Bloomsbury. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.